Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Listening to Into the Valley, a Phoenix Suns podcast, a part of the Bright Side Podcast Network.
Welcome, everybody, into the Valley. I am Ethan Schutt, joined by Philip Russell and Ryan Schutt. And after a sickness-ridden, travel-ridden, no electricity or internet for some this morning, lots of haters really got in our way. Isn't that right, Ryan?
That's exactly what happened. The haters said, how can we bring down Into the Valley? And boy, they found a way for a couple weeks, but we back, baby.
We thought it was bad getting fired by our parent company. This is so much worse.
We were in meetings with Vox. That's what it was. The last few weeks we were in meetings with Vox.
Yeah, that's what's been going on. But we are back and we are happy to be here to bring in the new era of Phoenix Suns basketball, which sounds dramatic as I typed the episode title, but I'm like, I don't think anyone can really argue about it. It is officially kind of the start of a new chapter. When you think of the history of the Suns, however many years from now, much like the Nash era, what you could call the Bubble Suns, the Valley Suns, the whatever, the Kevin Durant era has begun, and we are excited to talk to you about it. Philip, how are you doing, good sir?
I'm good, man. I'm really excited to talk about the Bucks game last Sunday, which is the not Kevin Durant game of the week. But I think there's a lot of good stuff to learn about the Suns, about their bench, and then, of course, about Kevin Durant against the Hornets and the Bulls. Let's put the cards on the table. My team, the Chicago Bulls, they're trash. The Charlotte Hornets, they're also trash. So I don't know exactly how much we're going to be able to take away directly from those games, but I think we'll get some ideas. But I think, and I don't know if this is a super hot take, but I think the Bucks game from this week might be the most informative about Phoenix as a team.
I agree with you. I don't think that's too spicy. And we were literally just talking about kind of like, hey, we've missed a lot. How do we want to kind of get us back where we need to be? And kind of the gut reaction is, well, people want to hear about Kevin Durant. Let's talk about the Kevin Durant games. But then you look at the slate since the All-Star break, which for those who maybe haven't been able to watch, haven't been able to keep up, started with a game against the Thunder where a lot of people were like, oh, it's going to be the Kevin Durant game. It got flexed. It wasn't. It was just a game against the Thunder. But the Suns won 124-115. Then the game Philip mentioned on the 26th, the Bucks game, Suns lose by three, most entertaining game by far of the last week. And then the two Kevin Durant games, Charlotte winning 105-91, and then the Bulls last night, 125-104. I'm excited to talk about that one with Philip because you can't talk about a Bulls loss without getting something entertaining from Philip. But we have, like I said, a good slate. I wanted to just start with the Thunder game real quick before I ask a question that's guided towards the other three. Is there anything from the Thunder game that you guys did want to cover before I kind of just moved past it? Because I didn't want to be rude if one of you had some like insane deep dive that you picked up from the Thunder game.
Go on. Do you want one? I have one.
Go for it, man.
Okay, so the Suns, and you hear it in every opposing broadcast right now, the Suns are a really good team in the mid-range. Suns started getting to the mid-range really easily in the third quarter. So what the Thunder did was they went to a zone to try to prevent that. The Suns immediately know what to do. This is at 9:30 in the third quarter against the Thunder. They overloaded one side with Josh Okogie and Devin Booker. CP took a pick, got it to Okogie, who slipped it to Book in the corner. Book drove off that. And then as the defense was rotating, DA sliced down the middle for an easy dunk. So the Thunder were like, oh, our zone just got absolutely torched. Let's go back to man-to-man. And the very next possession, what did the Suns get? A wide open mid-range jumper. So it was just really fun to see how the Suns operate, how comfortable they are with teams flipping into zones. They know the sets they want to run, even against kind of gimmicky defenses. And it'll be interesting now to see if that cohesion keeps up with a new star player on the court with them.
Do you think, I don't know how sidetracked I want to get here. Do you think the Thunder are going to be like good upcoming? Or do you think they almost tanked too hard?
I don't see a way to dig out of where they're at.
Shea is so good. Like, I just want to, quick aside, like, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is phenomenal. Philip, you watched him. I think you were still pretty loyal to Kentucky back in those days. You've seen what he is putting up this season. I didn't know if you'd already hopped off the Kentucky train there, but do you want him to leave the Thunder? Because I personally do.
I want to give it at least till next year, right? Like, see what Chet Holmgren can do and whatever draft pick they get this upcoming year. And I like some of the pieces that they have. They just need to put it together. And they need to put it together in a season where there's a clear direction for the team, where the team can all definitively say, like, we are trying to win this year. Mm-hmm. I don't think Shea has had that since the year he played with CP3. Shea is a star player. I don't think he's a superstar quite yet, but he's definitely a star in the league. And Josh Giddey is a brilliant basketball mind. So you have those two pieces who can be really helpful. And then some pieces around them that are solid players. I'm thinking especially of Lu Dort. So because of that, because you have two veritable players, some pieces, you want to see them give it a go. And I just don't think we've seen that yet. And hopefully next year will be a season where we can all say, like, yeah, they're giving this a real shot.
I think it'll come down to two things is like, what is ownership's investment in Shea as the future of the Thunder? Do they want him to be that piece? And does Shea want to be that piece? I think the conversation we're having about them is probably the conversation a lot of outside folks had about the Suns for a while with Devin Booker asking, you know, especially in some of those, you know, team total win seasons, like, do you blow it up? Do you move Booker? I think it's probably a similar conversation because Shea is an all-star. Shea is an incredibly talented player, but does he want to buy in the way Book bought into Phoenix? And I think that's going to be part of it because we knew the whole time Book wanted to be in Phoenix early on. And that's been kind of the cool thing with Kevin Durant coming. He's like, I don't want to go join a super team. I want to build a super team here. And look what's happened. So I think some of it will depend on like what Shea Gilgeous-Alexander wants to do. If he sees OKC as his future, then potentially in a few seasons, like Philip said, that could be a possibility. But I think he has to be bought into that idea. And I think the ownership has to be willing to build the correct foundation around him to do that in the way we eventually got to see play out in Phoenix.
They also have two guys named Jalen Williams from the same draft, I believe. I think that's my favorite Thunder tidbit. But no, I think you're right. I wanted to quick call out, I think, with the Thunder game kind of moving forward, we also have seen campaigns resurgence. I think if you're looking for something to kind of note as this week started and has gone on, campaign is back in the lineup. Landry Shamet is still injured and not playing. But it was good to see Cam come back. I thought he had a strong game against the Thunder, one that stood out to me just in a it's good to have this. We've missed this. And I think we'll definitely, I'll be curious to see what that guard rotation looks like kind of moving forward. But let's move in to the rest of the week here. I know usually we kind of say, hey, what's one thing that stood out to you? But my concern with that is you either pick a Kevin Durant game or you miss the Bucks game in its entirety. So I want to talk about the Bucks game real quick before talking about the what I'll just say Kevin Durant games in general, and we can kind of pick and choose from that. The Bucks game, in my opinion, was one of the best games of the season. It was one where Suns are without Kevin Durant and obviously without Cam and McHale now, a whole new world when playing what I would call like a true contender without the pieces they've kind of come to rely on. And the Bucks were without Giannis, but luckily their other superstar, Drew Holiday, decided to show up then. I thought the game was so much fun. It was one where I think I tweeted early in the fourth, this is a win or lose, I'm happy game. Suns took a couple strong right hooks where I was like, this could get out of hand quickly. Yet they continued to battle. They continued to piece it together and ended up putting on a really good performance that just fell short. But it's down to a possession under a minute. Shades of NBA Finals kind of come back to you as you see Devin Booker going against Drew in such a vital moment. I thought the game was great. I know a lot of fans have a hard time enjoying games that are losses. The Twitter feed was brutal with people talking about PTSD and all these things of I don't ever want to watch another Suns-Bucks game. And I get it. But just as someone who enjoys watching good basketball, it was phenomenal. So before I kind of talk about some stuff that's maybe stood out to me, wanted to open up to you guys. Watching that Suns-Bucks game, you can go a million directions. You can go the Jay Crowder revenge game. You can go with Drew Holiday. You can go with Booker's late game heroic attempts. Just wanted to kind of open it up. Philip, I know we talked briefly, so I know you've got a couple things in mind. What's something that stood out to you from that Bucks game?
The Bucks are so good at defense, man. There were several possessions that stood out early on in the game with a little under 7 minutes left. The Bucks shut down three distinct actions from the Suns. They shut down a pick and roll. They shut down a post, and they shut down a cut off the post as well. And there were other times in the game, so that was really good team defense. There were other times in the game where it was just one-on-one individual brilliance. Lopez, a phenomenal block on Booker late in the fourth. And what he had done, Lopez throughout the game had kind of given DA his little push shot that he takes, and he seemed to be conceding that, like, DA, you're not going to come towards the rim. I'm not going to step out so you can sidestep and hit a layup or a dunk. So instead, take your push shot all throughout the game. Late in the fourth quarter, all of a sudden, Lopez attacks that and closes out hard and gets a block on DA. So little stuff like that. And then he had the big block on Booker as well. But their defense from Drew Holiday one-on-one on Devin Booker was phenomenal. Drew Holiday is an insane defensive talent, and I thought he was wildly impressive on Sunday against Devin Booker.
Yeah. Ryan, what about you?
For me, it kind of solidified my opinion that on Josh Okogie being the fifth starter, or at least kind of got me in the mindset to see that. And I think as we saw him the rest of the week, I think he fits really well in that. But his box score is never really going to be super flashy. He had a really good night last night, so that's kind of an anomaly points-wise. But the dude is just one of those guys you can plug in, and he's going to do everything at 100%. He's going to hit the boards hard. He's going to try and facilitate. He's going to get you a bucket when you need it. I've really been impressed with him, and I like the way he fills in those gaps and allows the other bigger names to fill their role, and he's just going to be like the utility guy. And I think we saw that with Milwaukee and especially the last two nights with Kevin Durant on the floor.
Yeah, my problem on Sunday is that he got cooked late in the game. He may not be that
fourth quarter closeout guy, yeah, but at least to start, I think
that's where I'm at. I don't care who starts. He doesn't need to close against age.
Sure. And I think that's completely fair.
And he might eventually. So, okay, let's go all the way back. I have been on Bright Side of the Sun on the little fan table that we do. And even on this podcast, I have been a slow adopter of Josh Okogie minutes. There's no question. Last night against the Bulls, Wednesday against the Hornets, he played well. He played his role well, even though he didn't shoot well on Wednesday. He was fine with what he did. On Sunday, down the stretch, he did not belong on the court. And that's, we'll get to this a little later. That's one of my fears come playoff time. Like, is Josh Okogie a playoff rotation player? And I think that's a big question. And I know some of Suns Twitter treats Josh Okogie and thinks of Josh Okogie as like a Drew Holiday, like a Walmart brand Drew Holiday, but he just wasn't that down the stretch. He didn't look comfortable. He missed a wide open tip in clutch time. Drew Holiday, who's not the fleetest of foot for a guard, he's a big, strong guard. He was blowing by Okogie. So he's going to have good performances throughout the rest of the season because, like last night, he's left wide open against a team like the Bulls. But we have to see Okogie playing well or at least competently down the stretch against really good opponents. I think that's the next step. And from his trajectory this year, he'll probably do it. But he's not there right now. If the playoffs started today, I would not want to see Josh Okogie in clutch time in playoff minutes.
But I think that's also the value of having a Torrey Craig who has that experience, having a Terrence Ross who brings that veteran leadership and has been in that position before. You don't necessarily need him to be that guy, but I think he definitely starts the game with a really nice tone and is going to be that kind of get your hands dirty kind of player that allows Booker and KD to kind of get in the flow of the offense and let him kind of do that dirty work to set the tone for the game, not necessarily close it.
And I don't have the same value of him that some people seem to as a one-on-one perimeter defender. People think he's a clamps guy. I don't see it. I think the phrase you're going to see a lot that I do agree with is a point of attack defender, which is a lot of the times on the how are you going to handle the pick and roll? Are you going to fight through when needed? Are you going to know how to hedge hard and recover? He's got that. But I watched him one-on-one against Drew Holiday, and I said, he doesn't have that lateral quickness that I would expect a lockdown perimeter defender to have, right? Like, Mikhail has a different build, but Mikhail's got that. Mikhail could move his feet, not to the extent that some people talked about as well. Like, he wasn't, I don't know who the best example of that could be. Marcus Smart is pretty phenomenal in that, in terms of just you go one-on-one in the perimeter, not going to get blown by often. But I think Okogie brings so many intangibles, offensive rebounding being one of them, crashing the glass hard being one of them, being in the right spot, even if that is just in the corner on offense, like kind of knowing your role. But I'm okay if we want to jump on the like Okogie's the fifth starter, because I genuinely don't think it matters. I think people put so much value on the whole who's the starter thing. But I can go back to last season where Chris Paul was a starter, but closing games, there were times where we were like, yeah, but that's not our five. I am not ready to sign Josh Okogie up to be in the closing five. And I think that leads to a conversation that's also worth having within the Bucks game. We saw Terrence Ross get one of his longest runs. I thought defensively, the effort was there, but it was clear he's still learning a new system. It was clear his brain was processing, when do I switch? When do I not? When do I recover? But which I'm fine with. It's odd when you can watch someone think through. It's very clear in soccer. Soccer is one of the most fun ones where you can watch someone think really hard because they're on a huge open field and a lot of times they're by themselves and it's nothing but constant movement, keeping your shape. It was funny watching Terrence Ross do that within half court defense. It was a lot of kind of shoulder checks, a lot of points of communications, but the effort was there. And when he was in the right place, I thought he did well. So I'm not ready to write him off as a defensive liability. Offensively, hit a couple big shots in that game. I think he ended up being one of the few plus shooters. Yeah, 3 of 5 from the field, 1 of 3 mm-hmm. from three. And just as a quick big picture of the game, Sun shot 8 of 24 from 3, Buck shot 13 of 45. So that's 33% and 29%. And the Suns went 13 of 22 from the free throw line. So like there were, if we wanted to do the really easy, like what lost the game, you're like, make your free throws, you win the game. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Let's throw it out there. We can move on. But I thought Terrence Ross showed that his name is at least on the list of he does have a chance of fitting in somewhere. TJ Warren hasn't showed me anything in his small stints to be like, yes, he belongs. Now there's time and he's recovering and whatever, but he, I'm not sold on. Landry Shamet, when healthy, I'm still wanting to give a good look. I'm still higher on Damian Lee than some. People seem to have kind of just thrown him out with the Josh Okogie resurgence. I don't know what you even call it. But I think we have a grouping of guys that Monty Williams is going to have some hard work with in terms of either figuring out who's in the group and then what their role is within that group. Yes. And Ryan, I think you still made a good point too. If you're kind of, I was going to say gun to your head, but John Morant, let's maybe find a new phrase there. Everything on the table. If you're telling me who do you want to be that fifth in closing minutes right now, I'm picking Torrey Craig 10 out of 10 times because he is the one that I view as the one, like, I know what to expect from him, which means the other four guys probably do too. Everyone else, I still have the little bit of, well, is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? I don't know. But go ahead, Ryan. Didn't mean to kind of cut you off there.
I was going to say, to your point about Monty's decisions, just to make a quick plug, Kellen Olson actually had a really good article coming out, I believe, All-Star break after some of the trades went, where early on in the season, Monty Williams talked about wanting to have about 9.5, 10 guys ready for the playoffs. And so Kellen Olson kind of, it was almost a stream of consciousness article where he was just like himself trying to work through what will that look like. So we can share that on Twitter. It was a really interesting read as Kellen was just trying to work through kind of what that looks like. And so if you're kind of also interested in that kind of what are those rotations going to look like? What are those, you know, five to start, five to close guys going to look like? It was a fun read if nothing else. And I thought it was pretty thoughtful as well.
DM me that one if you got a second. Gotcha. Whenever me or Philip are talking, I want to share that because I like giving Kellen love because Kellen's phenomenal. Philip, was there any other within that kind of battling group that made a big impression? I know Baisley also got his first minutes, which were, I mean, I think that can be enough to talk about him on the podcast right now. But like, was there anything else within that group that maybe left you either asking additional questions about the future of that? I don't know what we need to call that group. It's a bunch of dudes scrapping for minutes that don't go to someone guaranteed. I'll ask you this first, and then I'm going to re-ask that question. Do you think Campaign has kind of cemented his role as the backup point guard? Do we think there's any concern that could shift after kind of watching him coming back into the fold and seeing what that looks like? Or do you think he might be trending towards that group?
I did not love Campaign this week.
Me neither, for the record, as the Campaign stand.
I thought his shooting was sporadic, but that's normal. That's,
yeah, Campaign.
And I think his decision-making left a little bit to be desired, sometimes forcing passes to the post, sometimes shooting when a guy like Damian Lee was wide open against Charlotte. That happened a couple times. So I think, at least for now, he is the backup point guard because there is no other point guard on the roster.
And that's the difference. I think the question is – even if he's not solidified, who else is there?
The problem for Campaign, though, is that there's a very tall, lanky man.
Yep.
Who can handle the ball very well and seems to have a little bit of a relationship. Little sparks are flying with an Australian man.
Old Jock, man, they look good last night.
There's a KD Jock connection that's bubbling. It's like watching The Bachelor. It's like, oh, there's some real chemistry here.
I don't have any other connection other than like we follow each other on Twitter with the folks over at PHNX, but they've got Jock on their show. They've been doing a lot with them. I want someone to ask him the question of like, so like we saw it on TV, but like, did you feel like you were getting some extra love? Because it seemed like after he misses a free throw, KD comes up from the other side to give him that pat and give him that pep talk. After a good entry pass or even Jock attempts a move and it doesn't work out, like KD seemed very, very expressive in his support of Jock. And I mentioned that to Philip. He was over here watching the game last night live. And I thought he made a really good point about maybe why that value is. Philip, do you remember what that one was?
Yeah, because the Suns are desperate for a backup big to be competent. About as much as they're desperate for a backup point guard to be competent. So kind of to circle back, there's a possibility that the Suns can figure out a rotation where they don't have as much need for a backup point guard because they have enough ball handlers who they can keep on the floor. If it gets to a point in the playoffs where you're staggering and at all times you have two of KD, Book, and CP on the court, campaign becomes a luxury instead of a necessity if the Suns can figure out some good rotations to keep around, especially a Book KD lineup. So again, for now, yes, campaign is the backup point guard. I don't know if that's going to mean 18 to 20 minutes a game come playoff time.
That was kind of my takeaway, was I think regular season role is going to be there. It's hard for me to imagine any playoff rotation where it's not Chris, Devin, or Kevin with the ball. Like, I feel like the point Book / point Kevin / point whoever, like, it's just going to be interesting. And I'm also really interested to see how Monty decides to stagger those rotations. I think we're watching it happen with Kevin because of the minutes restriction. Mm-hmm. Like, I think what we're watching is not what we should come to expect. Like, I think this is out of necessity. It's allowing Kevin to get more of that connection with the jocks of the world, which I love. But I'm really intrigued to see what those rotations look like later on, especially when you're playing a team that might be massive wing heavy, where you're like, all right, is Chris Paul out there during some of these moments? And if not, what does that look like? And then you're looking at Book with one of the other guards that are in the group, and then Torrey, Kevin, DA. I don't know. I think Monty has a lot to decide between. And so I think David over at the 4-Point Play had tweeted earlier this week, or maybe it was right before the Kevin Durant return. He's like, I'm already dreading listening to people on Twitter get angry about rotations. He's like, people love to be upset about Monty already about rotations. This is legitimately going to be the most obvious trial and error stint when it comes to rotations. They're figuring crap out because they just lost two foundational staples in their lineup. Add Jay from last year if you want to count a third, and have inserted Kevin Durant. You got to see what works and what doesn't. So that was one thing I did get to kind of enjoy, but still kind of left me wanting more, was Chicago and Charlotte. Like, that's not it. Like, this is team building, if nothing else, with Kevin on the court. But there's just a lot to figure out. And when we talked early in the season, we were kind of having like our goals for the year, or maybe it was New Year's resolutions. I said, I want to have the rotation figured out with a month before the playoffs start. Right. I mean, that was in a pre-Kevin Durant world. Yeah. But I said, if the roster we have now is the roster we have come playoff time, Monty's got to have his crap together a month leading into the playoffs, because then it's not rotation trial and error. It's system trial and error and process trial and error. And you're figuring out what works, what doesn't, what you want to kind of keep to yourself to bring out in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. That is scrapped. We have to figure it out.
The luxury we have, though, is even if rotations are messy, at the end of the day, you still have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker who are going to get things done on the court. So even as you're trying to figure out, it won't be as much of a detriment kind of trial period as it would have been maybe early in the season without Kevin Durant. Like, you still have two of the best players in the league on the floor. So even if everything isn't working exactly as it should, you're still going to be in the mix in games. You're not going to be getting blown out because you're trying to figure things out. It's just a luxury I think we've never really had before, having those two guys or those two kinds of players on the team.
Yeah, it's Booker and KD, and I think the Hornets coach made mention in his pre or post game, like, those are two guys that you can't afford to defend one-on-one. Like, those are two guys that necessitate help. And when both of them are out there, it leads to what we saw against Charlotte to some extent, but really Chicago, sorry, Philip, where it was just like, Zach LaVine looks like deer in the headlights saying like, oh crap, what do I do? And so I'm excited for that. I had one weird historical question for you, Philip. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. As our resident Warriors stan during the true Steph, KD, Draymond, whatever. Can you ever remember in the playoffs the Warriors rolling out a five at any point that didn't have Steph, Klay, and KD? Like, were there times where they, I would say probably in bigger series, not like them slapping someone around in the first round. Like, did they ever go without a Steph or a KD or a Klay on the court? Because I just feel like there's no way that ever happened.
No, not one of those top three. But I also don't think CP is at a level that Klay was at before his injury.
Right.
So I think the Warriors had even more of a luxury having prime
three guys in that level.
Klay. Yeah. Yeah. So that I don't know if that's exactly a one-to-one comp. I think the question might be, did they ever go without Steph and KD? And I'm pretty sure it was very rare,
right,
for them. Like, it was,
I remember a lot of Steph plus four bench guys or KD plus four bench guys when they were kind of doing their traditional first sub and late first quarter, give your guys like a breather. And then they kind of figured out a stagger that allowed them to come back in, like, you know, all the fourth, 8 minutes in the fourth. I'm curious what the Suns equivalent of that will be. Will there ever be a five that doesn't have KD or Book in the playoffs? I don't think so, unless they're up by 15 or more. And I know Chris Paul's not on that level, but if there were a time where Book and KD came out, I feel like there's no way you're throwing campaign out there plus four.
Correct.
So it would have to be Chris, even if he's not at the producing level.
It has to be Kevin and Devin. It has to. Because as good as Chris Paul is facilitating the offense, his playmaking isn't where Booker and KD is in terms of getting buckets himself.
Mm-hmm.
So unless, and this would be weird, unless it's Chris Paul with DA, without KD,
that
and
was what
Booker.
That's what that I was thinking.
That's the only place where you can go, yeah, maybe that makes sense. If you're in a series where you really want KD and Booker to be together for the majority of their minutes, maybe you can roll out a CP, DA, and a bench lineup, hopefully heavy with shooting around them, so that you're initiating pretty much everything out of a CP, DA pick and roll.
Yeah. No, I'm intrigued. It's one where we can speculate, but at the end of the day, I think we're going to watch Monty's thought process play out with the rotations we see in the next couple weeks. And I do think, not to be too dramatic, I think it's going to be make or break for the group, which is my lame version of what I'm calling that, just bench plus reserve, whatever. Like, I think it's in Monty's best interest to say, I gave Terrence Ross all the run that I think he's needed to make an impression in the next 2 weeks. If it's not there, it's not there. Every time I try him out from here on out, it's at a detriment to someone else's opportunity, and we can't afford that. But just looking at this roster, and I know people are not going to like hearing Okogie being in the group. I definitely think he'll get minutes. What type is my point? But you're looking at Okogie, Wainwright. Is Wainwright going to touch the floor in the playoffs? Some people say yes. Some people say no. Jock, Campaign, Damian Lee, Terrence Ross, not a chance, basically touches the court. TJ Warren, I think Bismack is completely out of the picture aside from foul trouble with DA. That's the only reason I could see him coming in, or which almost ties to foul trouble. You're going against a Jokic, an Embiid, a whoever, where fouls are almost just a part of the defense, then yeah, he might. And then Saben Lee, so whatever. So you're looking at seven. That's a group of seven guys that I don't think have a defined role or a defined kind of minutes total within the rotation. So it's going to be fun kind of tracking that just from our perspective as the ones who don't have to make decisions, seeing what that looks like. Before I move to highs, lows, and just so you know, I had one question that I think plenty of answers are out there and they're all could be right in their own way. After watching the two games with Kevin Durant, who do you think is going to maybe step up more, take advantage of maybe a new opportunity, a new outlook that's been provided? The reason I kind of had this question come to my mind was because of Jock's performance. Jock in those two games, to me, he went from, in my mind, being a, there's a great chance that there are some series in the playoffs where he might not touch the court. Depending on who you're playing, maybe it's just a couple reserve 5 minutes. Maybe the reserve 5 minutes goes to a Torrey, it goes to a Biz if you're playing someone big. Jock could be phased out to some extent. Very valuable. Shooting has looked better, but still. With KD out there, on the other hand, I said, oh, there's something here. Because KD, not only I think just realizes that we need a backup five with value, I think he sees value in Jock of the always going to make the right read, fights like crap for the offensive boards and defensive boards. I think his post offense, just in kind of his skill set and the moves he has, are better than maybe you'd expect. And I think he does a great job handling an entry pass and making a quick decision with it, which is something that we have another center who frustrates me at times for not excelling. So for me, I watched those two games and I said, ooh, I'm gonna watch what happens with Jock here. Because again, we talked about it. If you're staggering KD and Book to make sure one of them's always out there, that means both of those dudes are not always running out there with the full starting five. So I think Jock could absolutely be elevated by Kevin. And the one thing I think that looks even better for him is if it is Kevin out there with Jock and no DA, Kevin's rim protection has already jumped off the screen, which shouldn't be a surprise to any of us. His ability to be the help side defender and help around the rim, I think helps where Jock might not always excel against some certain types of players where you can't maybe body him. But if you have the help side defender coming in that's 7'1 with a 7'10 wingspan, like that's allowed. So Jock was kind of the reason I thought of this question. Philip, it might be Jock for you as well, but who do you think is going to really, really benefit from it? Because I can think of a couple others as well.
The fifth starter. So for now, Okogie. Look at last night's game. Wide open. And then I think the Suns might, I think Kevin might enjoy the Suns' second unit a lot. He seems to like Jock. He has a connection with D. Lee. So whoever the main shooter is, if Kevin keeps playing with the second unit, specifically Damian Lee, I think we'll have an opportunity, even if it's not wide open threes, they're going to be very easy opportunities to attack closeouts, because the closeouts are going to have to be pretty fierce because they're helping on a Kevin Durant pick and roll, a Kevin Durant drive to the basket. So that kickout pass is going to be a really dangerous play. And you would hope that a guy like D. Lee can take advantage of that with getting his shooting back on track and then continuing his attacking of those closeouts.
Yeah. Ryan, what about you?
Jock was the one that immediately came to my mind. And this one might be a little optimistic, but I'm hoping it could unlock something in Ayton. Ayton has never had less pressure.
He was my third
to perform than he does right now. He can go nights like last night where he only had 7 points and 3 rebounds, and nobody's talking about it. Nobody has, like, he's almost an afterthought in the offense at this point, which is, again, another luxury we have now, because Ayton, for the most part this season, has been playing very well. He can be frustrating at times, sure, but I think having a gravity of a player like Kevin Durant could really free Ayton up to just play with zero pressure and just go out there and do his job and benefit from Book and KD both getting those doubles, being able to move freely more than he had. And again, maybe that's optimistic, but I'm hoping we could really see something come of DA's game because of it.
No, I think you're spot on. I mean, when I had the question in mind, if I ever ask a question, I try to at least think of three good answers just in case. DA was my third. I thought the Charlotte game was very eye-opening in terms of how easy it can be for him when he's surrounded by those guys. I mean, he put up, I think, 16 and 16, something around there. But outside of, I just rewatched the game with Philip this morning, outside of like a 12 to 14 footer on the baseline and maybe one quick jumper on the free throw line, everything else was within like 4 feet of the basket and easy. Like, it wasn't, well, you know him. He's never going to, like, body someone and back him down. Like, he was getting the ball in a place that was very good for him to do what he does well. Mm-hmm. And that stuck out. And I had a similar thought, I'm going to be honest, after the game last night. In a world where Kevin Durant is not the story right now, and maybe in 3 weeks, Suns Twitter will be back to Suns Twitter, but DeAndre Ayton going 27 minutes and having four field goal attempts. I was like,
it's crazy.
And no free throws.
And nobody cares.
Four free throws. Any other week, people are crapping themselves. But now it's like, okay, that's fine. Like, that's great. Like, that's phenomenal for him. I'm hoping to be able to not be so highs and lows. And the fouls last night weren't ideal either, but things were pretty in hand, except for your Bulls, man. They made things interesting there in the second. Right, Philip? Go Bulls.
No, we're getting nothing. We are getting nothing.
All right. Well, I love you very much.
Hey, but Patrick Beverly looks good.
No, he got a technical from the bench. All right. Let's move on to our highs, lows, and just so you knows of a Kevin Durant-led Phoenix Suns basketball team. And Philip, I'm going to let you go first on the high.
Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
There is so much space on the basketball court right now. And one of the reasons that Suns fans would be dumb to be bad at DeAndre Ayton after last night, or even overly critical of him. So one, he was playing with foul trouble. That happens. Yep. But then the second thing is there were at least, I tracked it throughout the game. There were at least five times throughout the game where he didn't get the ball, but he's putting significant pressure on the rim with his rim runs. And these are the passes that, when you're watching the broadcast, it's a pick and roll with CP or Book, and they whip a pass that for a split second, it looks like it's a high, quick pass to DA, and then it carries over to the weak side, whoever it might be in the corner. Again, the last couple of games, that's been Jock wide open. That pass to the corner is wide open in part because DA is filling the lane, and he's filling the lane really well with his rim pressure. And that's a part of the space. That's not just Kevin Durant creating the space. That's not just Booker creating the space. That's DA being a threat with his rim run. So Booker's brilliance in the mid-range, Kevin Durant's, CP's facilitating, and DA's rim running contributes to how wide open it seems at times. But then the Suns are also running beautiful sets. My favorite one was against Charlotte, where the Suns ran it was against the Bulls last night. The Suns ran a double drag in the first quarter. So CP has the ball on the left wing. Kevin Durant and DeAndre Ayton set screens for him. DA rim runs off of it. KD spaces to the wing, and then Booker lifts from the corner. You have Devin Booker spacing out one of your standard sets. Just spacing out. The classic, like, hey, someone's going to be in a corner. Scalabrine, Matt Bonner, those kind of guys. That role in some of the sets for the Suns is Devin Booker. That means the lane at times is going to be like the Red Sea, because there are going to be moments where teams won't leave Devin Booker. Teams sell out to KD. Teams refuse to let Chris Paul get an open mid-range jumper. There is going to continue to be so much space on the court. And I think that it's going to be really fun to watch even how some of the Suns' normal sets continue to operate so well because it's such an open floor.
I'm very hopeful, because of everything you just said, that Josh Okogie or Torrey Craig can have one of those Jay Crowder-like three-point shooting streaks in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because I think one of those two dudes currently, it could be Damian Lee maybe, but I think one of those two dudes, because the playoffs adds another level of intensity and gravity to a superstar, I think what was, I would say, a pretty open shot for Josh Okogie in the corner is going to be a wide open shot for Josh Okogie in the corner. So I'm hoping those dudes are in the gym every night, standing in the corner by themselves, just getting shots up, because I think they are going to be there the entire time that Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are playing together in Phoenix. So no, I think you're spot on.
But to that, it's going to be one of two places. It's either going to be DA in the short role or Okogie, Torrey Craig, somebody in the corner. And I was actually talking with David on Twitter a couple weeks ago, and we're thinking about where defenses decide they want the ball to go. And those are really your two best options. Do you want it to go to a corner with whoever that fifth player is? Do you want it to go to them lifting up from the corner closer to the wing? Or do you want to say, all right, big fella, you've been consistent throughout your whole career. Let's see if you, DeAndre Ayton, can actually beat us tonight. Or let's see if you can beat us for an entire series in the playoffs. And that's going to be really fun to watch, to see which of those two options teams want to force the Suns into.
Yeah. Ryan, what about you? What was your high for the week?
We've already touched on it a little bit, so I won't spend too much time, but it was just the way Kevin Durant elevated the bench. One of my concerns looking towards a playoff run was I just didn't think our bench as it was at the caliber it needed to be to fill in when needed and to play quality minutes in a playoff run. But after watching the way Kevin Durant makes all those guys better and allows them to do more because of who he is, I automatically feel better about what our bench looks like. Jock Landale, what we've already mentioned, was a highlight, especially last night. But I just think that it's amazing how adding one player can make other players better just by being who he is. And I think the difference of having a staggered lineup where it's KD plus bench is going to be markedly different than the times that we've seen even earlier this season when it was like Cam Johnson and Mikhail plus bench. What Kevin Durant brings to that bench unit is going to be huge. And I feel so much better at this point. Obviously things could change, but after what I've seen so far, I feel so much better about the resources that we have on our bench, regardless of what that looks like and who that is, because of that stagger with KD playing with them.
Yeah. I mean, it was hard not to like a lot of what you saw, I would think. My high is just I'm excited about being a contender again. And I know some people are going to be like, we were always contenders. That's cool if that's how you felt about it.
No, it's not.
If you've been listening to the podcast, I feel like we have made countless arguments about why that was never the case. And if they choose to keep listening to us while not believing us, that's cool.
That was
Thank you for coming. They
were delusional early this year if you thought the Suns were actually contenders. Sorry, carry on, Ethan. Pardon the interruption, as some might say.
So anyway, I think we're actually contenders now.
Yes.
And that's a good feeling to have. And I don't care about Vegas odds and ESPN articles. I'm talking about watch the game and you say, yeah, this team is legit. And the lack of clarity of what the playoffs and standings are going to look like is definitely going to be a fun storyline as the season progresses. The Nuggets, I think, are locked, if not near locked, to the one seed. And then immediately following, you have Grizzlies, Knicks, Suns, Warriors. Any of them could switch in my mind at this point. And then after that, you still have other groups that could kind of creep up if anyone falls out of grace. So it'll be interesting. And then in the East, I think you have an absolute guaranteed finals team in the Milwaukee Bucks, who, by the way, their win over the Suns was their 14th straight. And they were continuing to bring the heat without Giannis. Their defense, in my opinion, has continued to get better, which is very frustrating. And Brooke Lopez is stepping up in a way that allows the rest to continue. I think they look great. I think the East playoffs will be fun. I think they're going to have a lot of fun storylines with the will they, won't they Sixers, and if they're going to blow up, will the Celtics make the jump? There's a lot of good stuff going on in the NBA. That makes me happy. I like that my team happens to now be a true contender in the eyes of most people who, you know, whatever. So that's my high. I'm thrilled to be in that spot. Let's do a quick shift to the lows. I think we've all touched on some things that have frustrated us this week. Ryan, what was your low for this week?
Mine's kind of a backhanded low. And it's that it's, I have felt like the guy who goes to his ex-girlfriend's wedding and is so happy for her, but in the back of his mind, he's just like, man, I really miss you. It's been so cool to watch Mikhail and Cam Johnson thrive in Brooklyn. And at the same time, so heartbreaking because I love them both so much. And because
they keep
them.
Losing.
And they keep losing. But in already, in, Mikhail has games of 38, 21, 31, 24, and 45. Cam Johnson has games of 20, 33, 27. Like, they're doing great. And I want the best for them and I miss them. And it's just really painful to see them succeeding somewhere else while also being really happy that they've shown up and now everybody in Brooklyn loves them.
I agree. I want you to know I agree. I think it's also very clear that they're now in a place that doesn't have a superstar.
100%.
That takes those opportunities. 100%. So people are like, wow, they've improved. No, they
it's
haven't.
Like, no, like, there's just nobody else.
That's why we loved them. We loved that they were super good and were filling the roles they were. But when people were talking about like, oh, we're going to make the jump whenever Mikhail starts scoring 20-something and Cam starts scoring 18-plus, you're like, that wasn't going to happen with the Suns. The ball can only go so many places, so many attempts in a game. It's not happening. And I'm happy for them that they are together and happy. Losing, unfortunately, but together and happy.
Check yes, yourself. Philip. They beat Boston last night, man.
I think they were 1-6 to start their run with the Nets, though. But yes, they have maybe turned around. Probably not. We'll see what happens. Philip, what about you? Low for this week.
So Kogi and campaign. So we don't dump on them again. I just don't know. I just don't know who belongs in big playoff games as that fifth starter. And then as the backup point guard or Ethan, I think you helpfully put it the fifth closer. I don't know who that guy is. I've eaten crow a lot on this podcast this year. I am so impressed with Josh Okogie's improvement. I'm glad we were right at the beginning of the year when we said his shot looks better than a 30% three-point shooter. All that stuff has been phenomenal. I just don't know if he's the guy in the playoffs. And I hope the Suns figure out, and I hope they have games where Okogie can either prove or clarify that he is or isn't that guy for the Suns.
Yeah, my low is kind of just the lack of clarity that we're going to have to be dealing with. Elliot in the comment, Mikhail scoring 20 would have probably continued with CP3 getting older. I think you're right, but I don't think the wins would have increased because of it, because it's that addition by subtraction kind of mindset there. But I think you're right. The ability was always there. We always knew that. I'm kind of in a spot where I'm not looking forward to Twitter and the media people and all the stuff about. I worded it this way this morning. Some people seem to be running political campaigns for certain people to have minutes where it's like, this is my vote. Let me make it happen. And at the end of the day, we don't decide. We watch, we observe, and we provide analysis to some extent. I don't think we're going to know for a bit. Like, I think it's going to be some we sit and wait, and there's going to be some closing fives where you're like, how did we get here? And that's okay. Like, it's part of the process. But I'm kind of excited just to see guys have opportunities that are kind of make or break in terms of like, all right, this is your time to prove that you belong in this spot or that this could be your role. Yeah, Phil.
And silver lining, do you remember last year in the finals? I can't remember which game it was. It might have been game 3 or 4 where the Warriors sat Draymond for an extended chunk of the game, and they just rolled with Kevon Looney. He was playing great. He grabbed a ton of rebounds. That game was playing good enough defense. And afterwards, Draymond was like, it's fine. And the very next game, he comes out and has a typical Draymond, awesome Draymond game. I wonder if that's more the trajectory of the Suns heading towards the playoffs, where this is a bit of a cop-out, but I think it works, especially when you're deciding between guys like Okogie and Craig, who seem to fill noticeably different roles. They have some similarities, but also different roles. I think what what we could wind up seeing is it depends. If you're playing a team like the Mavs, it's probably going to make more sense that it's Torrey if the job is to guard a Luka. But if you're playing a more guard heavy team, maybe it will make sense to have Okogie in there. So I think the culture of the team, similar to the culture of the Warriors, could be to a point where we say whatever the matchup dictates is what we can do. And kind of the mental gymnastics you do is we as a collective are that good where we can match up well against these different kinds of teams.
Yeah. When I said similar, I was thinking more kind of focused on that offensive side of things where I think their role is going to be the I'm the guy in the corner. I need to hit my shots. And they both are our two best offensive rebounders.
Yes.
So like you're going to get that no matter what. But I agree. I think the size and the physicality is going to dictate it. B's in the comment, kind of going back to the frustration with a great picture from the B movie here, which if you ever want to watch on YouTube, there's a version that every time the word B is said, it speeds up. You're welcome. He says, perfect example. People were clamoring for Darius Baisley to get minutes. When he does, they complain that it came at the expense of TJ Warren. Yeah. I mean, that's it. That's the everyone wants the one person and till it's not the other person, you know, it is what it is. But I agree completely. In terms of kind of just so you knows, I feel like this one could go a bit of anywhere. So Ryan, as the resident who knows where this is going, what you got for you just so you know for me?
Mine is not Suns related, but it's certainly basketball related.
Yeah, baby. Give it to me.
The villain arc of Ja Morant is just crazy to me. And if you're not keeping up with that, it's looking really sad. And I hope he gets some better people around him because right now things don't look good. Ever since he said he was fine in the West, he has not been fine in the West for a number of reasons, including apparently pulling up on some kid with his entourage, going on Instagram last night and holding a gun to his own head. I don't know what's going on with the guy. I don't know if he feels like he's got something to prove or needs to prove that he's got some edge.
Hey, he's just like you, man. He's just trying to get at the haters.
Maybe it's the haters. I don't know. But and we're laughing. But like to me, it honestly is kind of really sad to see because as a Murray State guy, like I've kind of been pulling for him. I think it's cool to see the success he's had. And the last year's just been really disappointing out of the kid. So I hope he gets some better people around him. I hope maybe the league takes some action at some point just to give him some time maybe to reset and reframe what he is choosing to do with his life. But right now it's got a very Gilbert Arenas with a gun in the locker vibe, and I'm not about it. The league's better than that. The league's moved past that. And maybe he just needs to grow up. I don't know. But it's a rough look.
I think the Memphis organization needs to grow up as well.
100%. Like
start holding your guy accountable. So I work in secondary education. So we have star athletes. We have good players. We have people who are going D1. Like it is terrible for young people to give them a free pass because they're the star on your team. That is one of the worst things that you can do. And when you see that happen, what you're doing as an organization, what you're doing as a school, if that's what you're doing, is you are setting them up to flame out in a monumental way down the road. And that's what I'm worried about for Memphis, is that if you don't hold this kid's feet to the fire, because he's still a kid. If you don't hold this kid's feet to the fire and say, hey, you better grow up and let's get right. Let's start acting like a professional. Let's start acting like someone who has millions of eyes on him every time he steps on the court, every time he posts on Instagram. That's what you have to do as an organization. And if they're not, they're doing wrong for themselves and they're doing wrong by Ja if they're not holding him accountable.
And you're sending a message to anybody else who's coming up, especially through the NCAA right now, to come to the NBA. If you're like, this behavior is okay. I think of the Alabama player recently who was involved in the gun violence. And then what his first game back, they do the pat down check as he's checking into the game.
Something they had done all season.
Well, he's done it all season. But if all of a sudden the NBA isn't checking players on that, or the Grizzlies aren't checking, you're sending a message to these guys coming up and be like, hey, we're cool with this. And that just sets a bad tone for the league. And it's sad and it's frustrating, but that's my, just so you know, I'm sorry.
Well,
it's been on my heart. It's been frustrating.
Well, even just basketball, it's like the Grizzlies as a team are trying to adopt some reputation for being the bad boys. I mean, that's already been used, so it doesn't work. But like that team that runs their mouth constantly, mm-hmm. 1-5, Dylan Brooks fighting Shannon Sharp nonsense. Like it's interesting as the team has gone that way that the leader of that team has unfortunately continued to move further away from what seemed to be the like fun human highlight player, and that was kind of where it stopped into what this is. So yeah, we'll do the old hard pivot, aka the host isn't good at transitions, so he just says it out loud. Just so you know, is a prediction, gentlemen.
Ooh.
A prediction. And what I love about predictions,
we're writing it down.
We don't have enough loyal listeners to hold us accountable to them. Prediction. As of right now, the Phoenix Suns ranked 20th in the league in three-point attempts per game, coming in at 32.6. In order to crack the top 10, they would need to get up to 34.5 threes per game. Lots of numbers. Going to keep messing up. My prediction, by the end of the season, the Suns are going to be, I'm going to go ahead and just say top 10. The problem with weighted numbers here, and now we're getting a little too nerdy, you're technically assuming that a change in the last third of the season can outweigh the weight of the first two thirds. That's what makes this a little riskier than being like, yeah, they'll probably chuck up a couple more. So I'm not sure how it's going to work, but here's what came to me. And if you're like, oh, Ethan probably saw something in the numbers against Charlotte and Chicago. One of them, yes. One of them, no. They hardly shot any threes in one of those games. But I think the rotations, the gravity of some players that are being added, I think we are going to get to a point where Monty in practice is like, my brother in Christ, if you are that open in the corner, you have to shoot. It is the right decision because it's within the flow of the offense. I think we're going to see an increase. I don't know how big. I'm going to throw it out there because it's fun. But I think the Suns are going to be shooting more threes, and they will be good decision open threes. Because I think that is something that's going to come from the pull and the help of Kevin Durant that Mikhail never warranted and Cam never warranted. And it's going to lead to the Damian Lees, the Torrey Craigs, the Josh Okogies getting an extra half to 1-3 a game. And those are going to stack up because they're not going to go anywhere when those guys are constantly in the rotation to some extent. So there's my just so you know. We'll see what happens. I think it's not surprising that the Suns rank where they rank, but I'm hoping that if that does continue, they will have the efficiency of a Kevin Durant shooting the ball, because that boy is insane in terms of his field goal percentage through two games. And I'm hoping that sticks. But that's what I've got for you. Philip, bring us to a close, my man. What's your just so you know?
So we have big picture NBA. We have offense. Now for a little bit of defense, I really like Kevin Durant and DeAndre Ayton in pick and roll defense together. There were a couple times where it was mainly against Charlotte where Gordon Hayward, just a bigger player, is being checked by KD. And then they put Gordon in a pick and roll because that's how so many offenses work in the league. And the Suns just switched. And I love that idea because that's trusting both of those guys to be exceptional in aspects of the game that might be underrated for them. DA's ability to stay on ball to contest at the perimeter, and then KD protecting the rim.
Mm-hmm.
If they're giving up that easy switch, they're saying we're comfortable with with KD as the ball rotates around being the guy who's going to give the contest at the rim. And I think that's great. I think that can be really good. So the person to watch in that will be DeAndre Ayton, to see how he holds up against some of the bigger wings. And we might even see it tomorrow against the Mavs.
I'm excited for tomorrow. I know that KD has already downplayed the, like, yeah, that's the league. It's all about stories with him and Kyrie. I'm less concerned about that aspect. I'm more interested in just watching those two teams play, given that probabilities seem that there is a chance that those two teams could be horribly matching up in the playoffs once again, which would be great for Suns fans. Definitely no anxiety or horrible memories there. Guys, we're at the hour mark. I feel like we covered a lot about pre-KD, post-KD games the last couple weeks. Anything else that we need to mention or talk about? We are going to be recording live again next Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Central Time, just like before. Might have a guest, might not, figuring that out right now. We're just working on some scheduling stuff, but we'll definitely be here for that. Guys, anything else before we bring it to a close?
Go, son.
I got nothing else. Let's do this. We out.
Wow.
Stole it. Yes. I've waited.
All right, Philip, anything else that needs to be added to the podcast now that Ryan is off the screen?
At the risk of sounding redundant, go Suns.
I am Ethan, and for Philip and Ryan, this is Into the Valley, the Phoenix Suns podcast.
We out.
Love you so much.